Hey, pull up a chair. We're so glad to have you join us here on the Back Porch Education Podcast. For the next half hour or so, we're going to talk about all things educational. It's a wonderful day to learn something. Glad you could join us.
Good evening, good morning, good afternoon, everybody. How wonderful is the name of the poem that we're going to be reading today by Irving Feldman. I don't really know much about Irving Feldman, but this poem was sent to me.
Excuse me, you're talking about a poem, but you haven't told us the title yet. You said it's a wonderful poem, but I don't know.
How wonderful. That's the name of the poem.
Oh, I thought you were just expressing delight that you had another poem, and I was going to, you know. So that's...
How wonderful. I have another poem. It's how wonderful.
How wonderful. Yeah. Gotcha.
That's it.
Well, I know what I'll say when you ask me what I thought afterwards. It was wonderful.
Perfect. How wonderful. Awesome. No, so this one, I don't really know much about this poet at all, but I especially like this poem because, okay, so when I moved, I got done teaching, I moved. One of my dear students sent this poem to me. I had never heard it. I didn't know anything about this poet, but one of my students wrote this out and sent it to me, mailed it to me, you know, with like a stamp in an envelope.
We'll put a diagram on the website in case you're not.
Yeah. Anyway, so for that reason and for other reasons, this poem's great. How wonderful. How wonderful to be understood, to just sit here while some kind person relieves you of the awful burden of having to explain yourself, of having to find other words to say what you meant or what you think you thought you meant, and of the worst burden of finding no words, of being struck dumb, because some bright person has found just the right words for you. And you have only to sit here and be grateful for words so quiet, so discerning. They seem not words, but literate light, in which your merely lucid blossoming grows lustrous. How wonderful that is. And how altogether wonderful it is not to be understood. Not at all. Just sit here while someone, not unkindly, is saying those impossibly wrong things. Or quite possibly they're the right things, if you are, which you're not, that someone. A difference, finally, so indifferent, it would be conceit not to let it pass. Unkindness, really, to spoil someone's fun. And so you don't mind. You welcome the umbrage of those high murmurings over your head, having found, after all, you are grateful. And you understand this, how wonderful, that you've been led to be quietly yourself, like a root growing wise in darkness, under the light litter, the falling words. Steve, come on. That stuff's awesome.
It is. That's a great poem.
I love it.
And I never saw it until you brought it today. So there's a lot going on there. I like what they're doing with the light, with the first stanza talks about not words but literate light.
Mm-hmm.
That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think in the second, doesn't it hit on light again? Like a root growing wise in darkness under the light litter, the falling word.
That's good stuff.
It's just coming down on you.
Yeah.
Right? It's just settling down on you. It brings you a place of contemplation, and that's what I think poetry's supposed to do.
Yeah. Yeah, good. And I'm going to go ahead and pat myself on the back for choosing this poem, specifically in relation to the movie that we're going to talk about today.
Yeah, we're kind of doing something a little new for our podcast here towards the end of our first season. Jason and I regularly talk about books. Maybe not as often talk about movies, but in this case, you know, I kind of said, hey, have you seen this movie? And Jason's like, no, just, well, watch it and we'll talk about it. So you're kind of here on the back porch with us today as a listener. And we hope an involved listener, leave some comments for us, send us your thoughts. But you get to listen in as Jason and I talk about our thoughts from the movie Finding Forrester.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it's a good one. I think maybe the spoiler alert just goes here, right? Probably, yep. Guys, we're going to spoil the whole thing. And you have 2 weeks before another show is released. So you have time to stop here, I would say, and go watch the movie. I checked it out at my local library, actually. Those kind folks were able to get it for me. But, you know, it's a good one. It's worth a watch.
Yeah, I'm not a snob and only watch films that won great awards or whatnot, especially probably the last 10, maybe going back 20 years, but at least 10 years, the whole awards thing to me has gotten highly politicized. And as a result, often the film that wins, while it might be a good film, isn't necessarily the best film of that year. Mm-hmm. So I don't get all wrapped up in we only watch highly
art.
Yes. Finding Forrester was a great flick. The main grab for me is I am a Sean Connery fan, and you basically have two main characters with some supporting roles. The main character, played by an up and coming actor at the time, a young African American, he is in public school. He's a baller. He is known for his basketball prowess, but we get a sense early in the film that he's smarter than he lets on,
mm-hmm.
That he's purposely holding back because of the culture of the basketball. The guys he plays on the basketball court with don't respect education. In fact, it's probably a negative to them if you're too smart,
yeah,
or put too much emphasis on education. And so we find this young man who has some, in particular, we see him in a literature class where the teacher is kind of able to draw him out a little bit. And it's obvious that he's much more familiar with the literature than anybody else, but he's very shy about revealing that. And you see mm-hmm. her kind of work with him to, so here's a textbook for home and another one for school. And that way people don't have to see you carrying books around with you, but the desire is to see him grow, and yeah. He's thankful for that, but he's still got the rep to keep. That moves us really to the second main scene, which is the playground basketball court where he and his friends are goofing around. You see that he's obviously a talented basketball player, but there is an apartment building across the street from the basketball court, and one window in particular is mysterious. There's this old man that eats children or something. You know, the old haunted house routine. If you ever seen Sandlot or whatnot, you know, if you go in that guy's yard, he's going to kill you. And as young men will do, there is a challenge made. You know, just go up and take something from his apartment and bring it back down. We'll know that you're a man or whatnot. And so right. through the dare and through him going in and then finding something he hadn't expected, which was a apartment full of books, he kind of gets distracted, leaves behind a backpack, which has his precious writings and whatnot in it. And through that, I'm going to stop being so specific here. That introduces us to the second main character, played by Sean Connery, which is a recluse, a gentleman who doesn't come out. He hires a guy to go out and do his shopping for him and whatnot. But it's eventually revealed that he is a famous author, has one great bestseller many years ago. And the rest of the movie builds off of this relationship that develops between the young man and the old man, both in love with writing, one just starting his craft and the other one not sharing his craft with anyone anymore. And they kind of agree mm-hmm. to a mentoring relationship, but what goes on in the apartment stays in the apartment type of agreement. I'm not going to totally spoil it for you, but a couple of things happen. One is that by doing well on standardized testing, by doing well on standardized testing, this gentleman earns himself a scholarship to a very prestigious private school in New York, where this is set. And it becomes clear that some of this is, I mean, they recognize that he's got scholarly creds, but they mainly went in for his basketball. Not that that would ever really right. happen in real life. He That's strikes right. up a relationship with a young lady at the school. But in particular, one professor sort of prejudicially assumes that something the student has written can't have been written by him. In fact, he thinks that he has stolen it, plagiarized it from this long lost author. And in fact, it's because the long lost author is now his mentor that all of this misunderstanding comes about. There's a test of friendship. There's a test of integrity. The plot's great. But there's a lot in it about teaching, which is why I suggested it to Jason. And that's really what we want to spend the rest of our show talking about, is what's in this movie about teaching? What can we glean out of it? If you haven't seen it, please go watch it. It's a great film, and you'll understand the rest of the podcast better. But that's a quick synopsis of what's in the movie.
Good. Okay, well, let's take a break.
Hey, during this brief break, I wanted to encourage you to use the share buttons we have on our website in order to help us get folks tuned into the show. Our goal is to encourage as many educators, homeschoolers, NFL punters, and donut makers as we can with these podcasts. So help us get the word out. Share our Facebook page, send folks a link to one of your favorite episodes. Do whatever you can to help us share this craziness with either your best friends or, if it's more appropriate, your worst enemies. We will love you all the more for sharing our love. Thanks. And now, back to the show.
All right, well, so I've ruined it for everybody. I hope not. But I didn't ruin it for Jason because he watched it, and I'm curious as the guy who suggested it to him to find out what you think of the movie.
Yeah, so a lot, some of what I was thinking came through in your synopsis. I'm glad of that. I liked the movie a lot. Okay, sorry, guys. I don't know, like, the film words. I just kind of, you know, give my impression. I thought it was quite heartwarming. I thought there were parts that were, you know, pretty tense. Some good setups and that sort of thing. I don't really know that much about, like, the film angle in sure. terms of that. One thing that I did notice, let me just say this so I kind of sound smart and then I don't have to talk about it anymore. I thought, wow, because Sean Connery, he starred in it, but I think he also like directed it.
I think he was part of the production. The director is Gus Van Sant, so one of the negatives I heard about the film is a white guy directs a movie about a young black man, but I think that's just all stuff that's politicizing things. I think any human can make a great film about great human characters, and that's what I'm looking at here. I don't think this is a
Well, at least Gus Van Sant or whatever his name is can, because it definitely is that. I mean, it's great. And okay, so this is the smart film thing I wanted to say. I was surprised. The movie's like 2 hours and 10 minutes or something like that. I was surprised that we didn't see Sean Connery.
Yep. Yep.
Really, we didn't. I mean, we kind of see him, but we don't really see him until like half an hour into the movie, right? And I thought, hey, wow, that's kind of neat. Like finding Forrester. He's Forrester, okay. So there's some suspense that builds.
Well, I think the sympathetic character of the film is Jamal, the young man,
mm-hmm.
and he finds. Literally breaks into the home of Forrester. But of course, behind the title is the whole notion that Forrester has gone into hiding and he has to kind of come out, take a big leap of faith and come out of his cell, so to speak, his apartment world, in order to help his new friend Jamal out of a tight spot where he looks like he's plagiarized. And, you know, unless Forrester shows up and says, well, I'm not going to try and imitate I'm not going to do my Sean Connery imitation.
Okay.
Right?
But,
but you know, I'm the guy behind him. Yeah. Without him telling the world that, then Jamal is in a tough spot.
Yeah. So exactly. And okay. So one of the things in terms of teaching, right. Or whatever, I don't even know. But another thing I noticed about the film is that before we even see Sean Connery's face, we see his red ink, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So the first thing, like the relationship is born out of an interaction that basically all of everything in the whole world tells you not to do as a teacher, right? Like, I was constantly told as a teacher, and I think this is true. I'm not going against this. I'm saying the movie goes against this, okay? I was constantly told they don't care how much you know until they know how much you care, okay? Jamal does not know how much he cares or anything. All he gets is his own writings that have all sorts of red ink all over the place, telling him, no, this is bad. This is constipated. Hey, I like this, you know, like it's all over.
Yeah, the comments are much further than a quote unquote professional teacher is going to get away with.
Yes.
But the relationship's built on the reputation of Forrester. Jamal knows who William Forrester is as an author.
Eventually.
Well, he's aware once he reads for what Forrester's written.
Yeah.
He's ready to be taught by him.
Yes.
This man knows how to write. He could help me.
Right. But he doesn't, when he gets his work back and it's all inked up, it's just some crazy old man in an apartment. We don't know that it's Forrester
right.
yet.
That's right. Right. So right. The relationship, the first criticism is, it ticks him off, right?
Yes.
He's angry.
Right.
He goes back up to confront him. Who are you to?
Right. Yeah, exactly. He confronts him. And, okay, so this is an excellent thing. Jamal confronts the crazy old guy. We don't know that it's Forrester yet. And the first thing Forrester does is double down. Like, he starts being overtly racist,
yep.
right? And Jamal has a decision to make, and Forrester says, hey, you have a decision to make.
Yep.
Are you going to go for it or not? Well, are you going to tell me what you think or not? Well, here are the stakes, right? So one of the enduring themes, I think, of the film... is how these guys from pretty different worlds end up having quite a strong relationship that is, yes, caring, yes, loving eventually, but always like brutally honest.
Yeah, the honesty is demanded by both of them. Neither
yes.
one of them wants to mess with BS. Their whole modus operandi. The one is a street ball player, right? He's real,
yep.
and it's funny they put Busta Rhymes as the actor yeah. playing
Jamal's brother.
You know, so he's
yeah.
real, and
yeah.
Connery is this old dude, but he's so desirous of honesty and real people that he's pulled himself away from society because after his first book is this major bestseller, he was hard pressed to find people who would deal with him honestly. There were,
yeah, they wanted to tell him what it meant,
and he's like, he's as unwilling for the relationship as Jamal is at the beginning. They're really trying to almost talk each other out of having anything to do with each other. But the love of writing is the glue that binds them together. And I thought that was just, it's the subject.
Mm-hmm.
It overcomes we would call almost insurmountable obstacles. A recluse and two people who are afraid of each other. I think Forrester it takes him a while to be certain that Jamal's not there to knife him and run off with all his books. And I mean, the Forrester character is scary. Well,
but how did
he's just mean.
Yeah. And their relationship starts on it starts by Jamal breaking and entering. Like,
and
he goes into his apartment and takes something.
And then leaves his book bag.
Right. Right.
Which Connery then shows up in the window. Hey.
Yeah.
Idiot basketball boy, you left something. Come get it if you're big enough for it, which he does.
Right.
And that's where the whole red markings and whatnot.
Yeah. So, okay. That was big. That was one big thing. Like, I loved the honesty. Like, I don't think that if you are Forrester, well, okay, this even comes out at the end, right? One of the teachers at the fancy school says, when Forrester finally comes out, he says, so Mr. Forrester, if you ever want a teaching position, be sure to let us know. And Forrester just looks at him like, no, dude, are you kidding me? No.
You're an idiot.
Right? Yeah. And I think that, I don't know why that was included. I don't know about that. But I'm saying, like, yeah, that inclusion is probably important. Like, the way that Forrester dealt with Jamal, you can't do that 5 days a week, you know.
Yeah, it's not the classroom. This is a different kind of, that's an important thing to me, is this is, I think that this is much more indicative of the kind of relationship a classroom teacher can have with some of their students. But I don't think it fits the, like you're saying, 5 day a week, 5 or 6 teaching hours a day persona.
No, you can't do this to 20 people at a time.
No.
I don't know if you could do it to 2 people at a time. This is a like very sort of master and journeyman, you know, like, or master apprentice or whatever.
Yeah, I don't think this is the kind of thing you can manufacture. I think it happens when a teacher and a student discover they have this relationship rather than, okay, I'm going to find one of these Jamals and make it happen type thing.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Forrester wasn't looking for somebody to try this on.
Yeah, he didn't want to be a teacher, still doesn't want to be a teacher at the end. He wants to be Jamal's friend.
Okay, good. Let's pick it up there after this, okay?
While this show is a back porch discussion, it does cost a little bit of money. So if you're liking what you hear, consider helping us out. You can simply use the donation button on the website to send along a one-time gift, or we have subscriber plans for those who want to commit to regular support. Subscribers can get premium rewards depending on how nice a chair you pull up on the porch. We have everywhere from sitting on the floor to our finest rocking chair available. But whatever you can do, know that it helps us keep the conversation going. And for that, we heartily thank you.
Okay, so, yeah. Jamal and Forrester, the relationship that develops and ultimately sort of ends up the way it ends up being, like you said, that's an interesting point. Forrester wants to be Jamal's friend eventually, right? Like, he comes to a place where Forrester views Jamal as his friend, respects him, honors him. That's a super important thing.
Well, if you don't mind, let me back this up just a couple of feet on the track. They're brought together by a love of writing. And Forrester adopts the role of mentor because he can't stand poor writing. And it's obvious to him that Jamal filling up these books with this intellectual constipation, as he calls it, is going to write. You know, what if I showed you how to write well?
Right.
And as a writer, I'm sure that Forrester understands the need for feedback. That writing in a vacuum, writing just for yourself, is almost useless. Right. Yeah. That you need that feedback. You need honest feedback. And so what brings them together over time is a common passion. They both appreciate the writer in the other man. And that to me is just a wonderful thing. Because I've spent a lot of my teaching time trying to motivate students with me, you know, or by being cool or relevant. And it's taken me time to learn that not everybody's going to like my English class because they don't like English. But if I present it with all the passion I can, they'll respect my passion for it. And when they share it, we get to go a little further than those who don't share it with me. You know, when I was in math class, I always appreciated the math teacher that was gung-ho about it. I wasn't. But I'd much rather be taught by somebody who's passionate about it than by somebody who's tripping over themselves not to offend me or not to cause me any grief or just trying to get me past their class. So.
Yeah. Yeah. And okay. So I think what I agree that they mutually respect one another. And I think that's a big part of it. So one of the words that's always thrown around in my grad class that I'm in is kairos. It's a Greek word that means like, it means like opportunity or something. Like this, but it's like a critical moment. Okay. And they're always talking about this, like in rhetoric, the kairos moment. Okay. It's the, when everything's ready and wow, we have a real opportunity here. Forrester seems to see those moments and really use them to teach Jamal well. And I think, like you said, Jamal's writing drives Forrester crazy, not because it's bad, but because it could be something other than bad, right? Like if someone who just wasn't at all interested in the writing process or whatever wrote up this 500 words on something that was assigned to them and Forrester read it, I can imagine Forrester reading it and saying this is bad and just tossing it. But it's Jamal's ability to go beyond that I think Forrester latches onto.
He sees a young man who's in the system where, you know, face it, most educational systems have a way of teaching writing, and it's the only way for you to write in my class and learn this formula, and I'll give you an A. And very early in the whole thing, if you remember that moment where Jamal starts trying to think about what he's writing and Forrester yells at him, no thinking. Now, I don't know if I agree with him, but he's trying to reveal to this young man what's worked for him as a writer. Stop thinking. I think he says something like, you write with your heart first and then you rewrite with your head or something like that.
Right. You the first draft is from the heart.
Yeah.
And thinking is happens during the revision process, that. You just watched the movie, everybody, so you know what he says.
And so we could try and pick that apart and talk about that as a pedagogical notion or whether that makes for good writing or not. That doesn't matter. The teacher is telling the student, you've got to change the way you approach this. And I can help you with that if you'll let me. I mean, Jamal's a tough nut. He doesn't trust a lot of people because he's grown up in a world in which that can really get you into trouble. So a lot of it is, the movie itself isn't about how to write well.
No.
The movie is about the relationship that should develop, but in a tutorial setting, again, we have to emphasize that, you know, that's based on mutual respect. I love that part where Jamal says, so did you ever, he knows he sold a book. Did you ever enter, you know, any of your stuff in a contest?
Yeah.
And Forster says, yeah, once. And he says, well, did you win? And he says, well, of course I won. I'm William Forster, right. You know. Well, did you win money or something? And Forster says, no. Well, you know, what'd you win? And Forster says, the Pulitzer. You know, it's like, okay, just one contest. Right. I won.
It was one and done. Oh, man. Yeah, that was a hilarious moment. And let's see, I'm trying to think about another moment that I thought was really special. Oh, I'll tell you a moment. I don't know if this has anything to do with teaching, but I really did like this moment when Forrester comes out of the apartment, right? When Jamal, for some reason, this was like, I found this really moving when Jamal says, hey, come on, are you ready? And Forrester's like, putting on a hat and glasses, even though it's nighttime,
yeah.
You know, they're going to go to the basketball game. Right. And a pro game, I guess it'd be the Knicks. And he says, he's like, come on. Are you ready? Yeah. I'm getting ready. And Jamal says, come on, we're going to be late. I spent money on these things, right. On these tickets. And then, you know, Forrester sort of realizes it's time. And they go. And I just thought, man, that's so cool. Like, it's a really neat moment where Forrester allows himself to be uncomfortable.
Yep.
Much the same way that Jamal was previously uncomfortable. You know, I thought that was... And then, of course, the way that ends... Oh, man. Yeah, I could go on because that... The way that outing ends, right? They go to the basketball game.
Yeah,
they don't even make it to their seats before Forrester has a bad episode. Jamal finally finds him. Yeah, panic attack. And he says, and Jamal says, come on, let's get you out of here. Like, I don't know. That was special to me for some reason. The way that Jamal at one point is able to push him and say, come on, let's go. Right. Like I spent money on these. But then later, when it's too much for Forrester, then Jamal's even steps up again and says, OK, now it's actually not as important. Let's get you out of here. You know, that was really cool.
I think the director is trying to say that part of relational wisdom is how far can I push this thing?
I should have just said that. That was a way better way to say
Real relationships are about comfort zones and getting out of them a little bit. Marriage is certainly that way. I think that's the relationship of parenting. How much can they take mm-hmm. before I've frustrated them? You know, you don't want to frustrate them, but you don't want them to be complacent. Yeah. You don't want them to just crawl in a corner and be forgotten. Yeah. And
fathers don't exasperate your children.
And I just the end of the film is William risking it all to come out mm-hmm. because his friend needs him to. I'm invested enough in this young man, and I love it. You know, he walks in that room and there's all these. It's like the writers. You know, wall of fame type. There's all these pictures of these famous writers because my name is William Forrester. I'm that one.
You know? I'm that one.
And just the effect that has on the, in particular, what I loved in that final scene, obviously you like to see the discomfort of the quote unquote bad guy, the professor. Is it Crawford, I think, who's out to get Jamal, at least that's the way it's written. But really he has an issue mm-hmm. with Forrester, right? They go way back. And that's right. What's partly at work once Forrester's work comes into play. And so here he is, you're watching Crawford kind of crawl under the table, but they keep showing Jamal, and he's deeply moved that this man who he tried to take the basketball game and couldn't make it has on his own, without anyone's help, gotten on his bicycle and ridden down through the New York streets, yeah, using his hand motions to signal a left turn and all that kind of stuff, and has made it there in his whole getup, and has come to his defense. That's obviously, yep, moving to Jamal, but the spectators, just the other people gathered, are witness. They, mm-hmm, know they're witnessing something significant. That this big man whose face is on the wall has shown up for this kid, you know, just another student. That's not normal, you know?
Yeah.
So I liked it. To me, when I came away from the movie, the first reaction I had was one of ennoblement.
Right.
That it's possible to move beyond the carrot and the stick and the professional teacher mentality. I've got to get these kids a little bit better and on, yeah, down the road towards who knows what. That some students, and I've had this experience, I haven't had the same story as in this one, but I've had unique relationships with students that, you know, that continue. I have some students that still stay in touch. I'm 30 years into teaching. Some of my favorite students are ones I taught fairly early on when I required a great deal of grace and mercy. I do it every day, but I mean, when I was a new teacher, I really needed a lot of understanding and kindness from the students. And when, mm-hmm, I received it, you know, it endeared the student beyond just, oh, they were a good student, or, right, or they got an A in my class or something like that.
Yeah.
They were a human.
Yes.
And exactly. And that humanizing, that's it, right? That's the ennobling thing. The classroom moves past just strangers throwing grades and papers at each other, mm-hmm, to human relationship. And that's a much better view of education than the standard.
Yeah. We might say that view. Forrester was cultivating wisdom and virtue, if we were trying to put a point on it.
And they're both cultivating it in each other.
Absolutely. Thank you. I'm so glad that yes, I agree. Jamal is also cultivating wisdom and virtue.
And I've had that experience in the classroom, right? I've had students put me back on my spiritual heels,
mm-hmm,
and bring out insights in class or write something or even in the hallways, you know, make me better by their lives.
Yeah,
and that's why I keep going back to school every year, is because there's something, yeah, going on there that's beyond just earning the little tiny paycheck.
Yep. Well, good. We missed some low-hanging fruit. We didn't talk about the bad teacher really at all, but whatever. you know, that'll give everyone else something to comment on and on the website,
well,
and all that.
Yeah.
There's lots more there, everybody, but this was a good one.
I loved that moment when Jamal starts. It's similar to the one in Good Will Hunting when he keeps completing the professor's sentences for him.
Yeah. Shaw. Yeah.
Dickens. Yeah. Blah, blah, blah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Come on, Professor Crawford. Yeah. That gets him thrown out of class.
Yeah. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, that was an awesome one too.
But if any of my students are listening, please don't do that to me in class.
Actually, please know that much literature. Yeah. And if you do, you can just say it. Like, please just interrupt me anytime. To whatever Coleridge has to say that you memorized is more important than whatever I was saying anyway. So just go for it.
Keep Shaw out of my class. But Dickens, Kipling, go for it. I'll even take the Twain.
Good stuff.
All right. I think that gives us another episode. And again, we invite your comments and your feedback, and your desire to join us on the back porch is our desire.
Yep. Thanks, guys.
Well, thanks again for joining us in this great conversation about education. We hope you will not just listen, but participate. Leave us a comment, suggestion, or thought on our website. You just never know when we'll use it on the show. Until next time, pursue joy and learn something.